like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Stephanie Seymour, a singer-songwriter who's been making music for a number of years. She was in the Aquanetas, who released their debut album in 1990. In the ensuing years, she's played in or fronted other bands which have put out often acclaimed records, so it's not altogether surprising that Seymour has now issued a stellar solo album. What is far less expected is that the album is all about birds. It's called There Are Birds, and the song titles, Northern Mockingbird, Black-Throated Blue Warbler, Blue Jay, House Sparrow, and so on, telegraph Seymour's commitment to various feathered friends. Without hearing any of There Are Birds, one could be excused for thinking this might be some sort of novelty record. Far from it! The 12-tune collection reflects Seymour's passion and expertise as a hardcore birdwatcher. Some of the songs tell stories about birds, and some tell stories from the birds' perspectives. Songwriting is excellent, deftly assuming multiple points of view, woven into engaging, frequently catchy music, crisply performed by hotshot musicians including E Street Band, keyboardist Charlie Giordano, and others whose resumes include playing with Ian Hunter, Patti Smith, The Rollins Band, T-Bone Burnett, and the G. Giles Band. It all adds up to a singular artistic and ornithological tour de force. We'll hear more about Seymour's affinity for birds and birdwatching, the inspiration for and evolution of There Are Birds, and more when I speak with Stephanie Seymour in a few moments here on Talking Animals on WMNF. I'll also play some snippets of songs from There Are Birds woven into our conversation. Later on in the program, I'll speak with Gracie Grishup in her guise as marketing maven for Pet Pal Animal Shelter in St. Pete, mainly about their Diamonds in the Rough event on September 7th at Hawthorne Bottle Shop. Right now, though, let's get to Stephanie. First, with an excerpt of a song from their new album, There Are Birds. This is a slice of Veery on Talking Animals on WMNF. That was a taste of Veery from There Are Birds. He inspired an excellent new album, totally devoted to birds, by Stephanie Seymour, my guest this morning on Talking Animals. Can't wait to chat with her. With a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing DJ at WMNF.org, or texting 813-433-0885. This is Stephanie Seymour on Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning, Duncan. So great to be your guest.
Oh, thanks for joining me on Talking Animals. And we're here, of course, chiefly to discuss the new album, which I guess I've made clear I like a lot. But I think we want to first explore some backstory, both yours and the album's. So what did animals mean to you as a kid?
Well, I've always been pretty much an animal freak. So, I mean, we've had pets ever since I can remember growing up. I've always had a cat. Cats are cats.
Okay.
Had, you know, rabbits, gerbils, birds. I did have birds. We had parakeets when I was young, very young. My family is very kind of pet-oriented. My dad has dogs, has had dogs for a long time. So I think they just mean, well, they mean everything to me, really. I just care for them so much, and I don't know what I would do without them in my life.
And it's interesting that there were, amongst all those cats and other things, that there were birds at one point or another that may or may not have foreshadowed what would later develop.
I don't know know if they did. I mean, really, at that point, I was so young, and I really wasn't thinking about it in that
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
It didn't sort of foreshadow the obsession that it is now.
Okay. Well, we'll definitely get into that obsession. And for what it's worth, when I was thinking about asking about the earliest days and if there were a bird, I just thought I would mention that we had a bird at my own behest. We had a minor bird when I was a little kid.
Cool.
So that was kind of a funky thing. Yeah, well, it talked, and of course, people taught it things that it shouldn't have said, so it was kind of a tricky situation, but we did have a bird early on in our household as well. So,
right.
So let's maybe look at a sort of parallel storyline. When did you first get interested in music?
Again, ever since I was really young, like my parents would play really great music. Like I remember my mom playing the Beatles a lot. But when I really developed an interest in playing music myself, well, I was about 15, and it totally coincided with MTV. I saw the Go-Go's on MTV and the Police, and that was pretty much it. I was hooked from there, and I always knew, like, I felt like I could play drums. So I asked my dad for a drum set when I was 15 after I saw the Police and the Go-Go's at the Garden in 1982 when I was 15.
Wow. Isn't it interesting, yeah, like how there's a pivotal moment, especially for someone who goes on to become a musician, where it's like that moment, the Police and
that
the Go-Go's.
Moment.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
being shocked, you know, it was like that was most powerful thing for me.
I'm sure. So were other people in your family musically inclined? Were other people playing music in the house or?
Not playing instruments really. I mean, we played in high school, not high school, but grade school,
mm-hmm,
you know, my brother and I and stuff. But no, but my family is a musical family. It goes all the way back to my great-grandfather, really, on my mom's side, who was an entertainer. My grandma used to perform when she was a little kid with him, as you know, in his shows. My uncle plays drums. He was in a band that was signed to Decca Records in the 60s, I think it was the 60s, my cousins all play drums. So it runs in the family.
Yeah. So you're at that Police Go-Go show,
yeah,
and which, of course, not coincidentally, has a couple of very, very good drummers at it. But it sounded like the thing in particular for you was Gina Schock. It's like, hey, there's someone like me up there playing drums.
Yes, that was a really big moment for me. I mean, seeing her on MTV was one thing, but then, you know, seeing her live, I literally can see the picture in my head of where I was standing, and the first time I saw her, it was seared into my brain. And so I just knew, I felt like I could play drums. I was always banging sticks, you know, on coffee cans as a kid, and I just knew I could do it. So that was it. And I asked my dad for the drum set, and he said, yes, thanks, Dad.
Yeah, well, that was a wise decision by Dad. So at that point, or at least maybe even when you first got the drum kit, what was it? I mean, obviously the Gina Schock thing was a pivotal moment, especially live. But I mean, was it like, hey, the idea of sort of driving the music? Was it the idea of just making an infernal racket or what?
Both. No, it was the music. I knew from the moment I started playing and playing along to records, and that's really how I learned to play. I knew within my heart that I was a musician for life. That was what I wanted to do. There was nothing that would ever change that, and nothing ever did change that. That was truly the course that my life took. You know, from working in the music industry on one side of things, but also always playing music. I took a break in there for a while for bird watching, but always playing music.
Well, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Stephanie Seymour, who's been making music for most of her life and recently released a stellar solo album all about birds called There Are Birds, backed by musicians who played with Bruce Springsteen, Patti Smith, Ian Hunter, T-Bone Burnett, and others. If you'd like to ask Stephanie a question about birds or music, drums, whatever, or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email DJ at WMNF. Or text 813-433-0885, and maybe we'll hear, before we get into more of our, at least our own conversation, another snippet. So this is another song from There Are Birds. This is a piece of Northern Mockingbird, new music from Stephanie Seymour on WMNF.
No, please don't think that I am mad. No,
That's a little taste of Northern Mockingbird from There Are Birds, the new album from our guest today on Talking Animals, Stephanie Seymour. So I'm going to just say that you said you grew up and that people were playing Beatles in the house, and of course the Go-Go's were a pivotal moment. So it sounds like, just based on some circumstantial evidence and hearing the new record, obviously, that harmonies, vocal harmonies, are kind of important to you.
Kind of, you could say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, huge. Stuff like Crowded House, Neil Finn, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I'm cuckoo for harmonies.
Of course it's a bird reference. Of course it's a bird reference. Yeah.
I didn't even mean it.
I know, that's the best part.
Yes, I'm a huge harmony fan. Also, you know, like Elton John, 70s kind of stuff, like in Northern Mockingbird, I was specifically going for that, like, Davey D, you know, and Nigel backup harmony kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's just the greatest, right?
Very cool.
I love them.
Okay, so let's talk a bit about the concept for There Are Birds, how the album came together.
Yep.
Can I just tell you one scenario I've imagined as I got steeped in the record and learned a little bit more about you? So here's the thing. I'm imagining at some point you wrote a couple of bird-oriented songs, and then you called out in the next room to your husband, Bob, a musician producer, "Honey, what if I did a whole album of these? Like maybe 10 more bird songs." Did it go down at all like that?
You're shockingly close. I mean, that's kind of weird, Duncan.
But oh, yeah?
Well, you know, first let me just say, like, I never really thought I'd make another record of my own. I mean, I had been singing backup for the last few years for people here and there, like for Sheriff Marshall, for Deborah Berg. But I didn't really ever think I'd make another record. I mean, I'd stepped away from music for maybe 7, 8, 9 years just for birdwatching. So one day I was sitting on my couch, and really the first two lines of Ruby Crown Kinglet came to me, which are, you know, Ruby Crown Kinglet, why you look so scared. And then I heard like a giant chorus like answer to it, which is just that eye, that eye, that eye, that eye. And like, it, if you know what a Ruby Crown Kinglet looks like, that's kind of humorous. But right away, the lyrics sort of just kept flowing out of me, and it really turned into a sort of quite somber song lyrically. I mean, really, it's about my sort of anxiety and depression, but it's wrapped up in a nice 2-minute pure pop song, you know? And I just heard that song within like 45 minutes, just fully formed in my head. It was like as if I was hearing it on the radio, like it was done.
Wow.
So then, yes, I said, oh, yeah, I guess I have another, you know, like 10 or 11 of those in me somewhere.
Yeah.
And I really did decide right then to make a record about, you know, using birds as metaphors and literally, you know, for what I wanted to say. I mean, it is an album about birds, but, you know, it's an album about me.
Sure. Well, and here's the thing. So when that song came to you pretty fully formed, which could be a whole other conversation about the muse and how when people get those kind of transmissions, it's pretty powerful. And
yes.
But at that moment, it sounds like you thought, yeah, I might have others in me. So at the moment that first song came, did you make the decision there and then that, like,
yes,
I'm going to keep going and not going to stop till I have a whole album,
yes,
worth of bird and bird?
I said, oh, my God, I'm writing a bird album. And I, you know, I did not belabor the songs. If the songs came to me like they did Ruby Crown Kinglet, it was kind of bizarre. It really was like an album of transmission. I felt like I was almost pulling the songs out of the air. And when I had them, I had them fully in my head, you know. That's happened to me before with other records that I've written. I've also dreamt songs, and I've got woken up and, like, ran over to record them into a little tape machine or something.
Yeah.
But this was this album, they really, mostly, there was no belaboring a song. There wasn't, if it took me more than a few weeks to get the song together, it didn't happen. Like American Robin, sorry, that never happened. Kiskity never happened. They're sort of half-formed ideas.
Mm.
But the other songs, they just flowed right out of me.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting because, again, the record, although there's obviously a lot of effort and inspiration and great playing and stuff, as I've kind of noted, but there does seem like kind of a breezy, not almost effortless element to them, at least as the listener.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really didn't want to force anything. That was sort of one of my criterium, is that I just said, if it's not coming to me, I'm not going to stress about it. And,
yeah.
You know, and one other thing that I just want to mention is that, you know, like, I play drums. I don't play any instrument. So if it wasn't for my husband Bob Perry, this record wouldn't even be. I mean, I had to sing him everything as a herd in my own head, and he had to literally, like, figure out every chord, every note almost about what I wanted. And it was sort of a frustrating process, but it was also really rewarding in the fact that when he was playing what I heard, it was like, that's it, you know?
Wow. So for all the years that you've been in bands and fronted bands and put out records and stuff, you weren't writing songs, at least in the conventional sense?
Because I had to do the same thing with both of my Birdie records, which, by the way, Bob produced Quarantine, the second Birdie record, and we did the same process.
Yeah.
And with the first record, it was like a mixture of my band helping me out and doing that. But, you know, when I was in the Aquanetas, I was the drummer, so I didn't have to worry about that.
Right. And we should quickly note that although there was a band called Birdie, that was also well before your actual devotion to birdwatching took hold,
yeah,
if I'm not mistaken.
Both Birdie and Psychic Penguin that I was also in, both for birdwatching.
Yeah, but I do think some of this may even go back to the birds in the house when you were growing up. There was little things that may or may not be signposts along the way. Anyways, there's been a caller that's holding for a while. Let's see if we can get them involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Stephanie Seymour.
Hey, yeah. Thanks, Duncan, for having Stephanie on. That's great to have music which reaches people emotionally that tells about the love of animals. So I got a few questions for you. Number one, have you done any research or included bird songs in any of your songs? Number two, would you consider any of your songs to be activistic, talking about all the bad things that are done to birds, like by hunters and pesticide users, etc.? Number three, can you or have you already done or plan to do a video component to these songs? Because you know how YouTube videos and stuff reach millions of people. Once again, thank you for advocating for birds. In my backyard, the number and variety of birds has fallen off a cliff recently, along with pollinators, and it breaks my heart.
I know. You're right. It is heartbreaking. And I hear stories from many older bird watchers that say how their migration experiences have tailed in recent years compared to what they used to experience when they were younger. To sort of maybe go backwards, I don't have a video component yet. Maybe I will. My goal was right away was just to sort of get the album out and just start going from that way. But yeah, I know I realize like video is the medium now, and that's probably something I should get going. So I also, regarding do any of my songs talk about the kind of blight on the environment and birds and stuff right now, I do not really have a song that discusses that. Migration is Over has kind of a depressing title, but it is actually a funny song about going to Central Park and like bird watching at the end of migration and realizing there are more bird watchers in the park than there are birds. Of course, I'm not opposed to discussing, you know, the implications that we are having on the environment, and that just all the, you know, you can't ignore what's happening right now in the world, rainforest and everything. And I totally forgot question number one.
I think was about whether there might be any actual bird sounds, calls, songs, whatever, woven into your own songs.
Nope. There's one cricket sound, though, but there are no bird sounds, and I didn't really do it intentionally, but there was nothing that compelled me to do that.
Yeah. Now, I will just say as a side note on the video question that you did put together a cool sort of Bob Dylan-esque video sort of promoting your appearance on today's show, which I thought was really fun and cool, and I thought that was super cute and great, and I posted that and shared that, and that's popped up a few different places on Facebook. But anyway, so I gather, as far as that goes, on a more slightly more serious note, that maybe as things kind of come together, do you think like a particular song will present itself like, okay, when I do make the video, I'm going to sort of see what emerges, or do you already have a song in mind that when the time comes would be the song that you would make the video of?
I mean, I kind of feel like, you know, Northern Mockingbird feels to me like, hey, that's the radio single, if there ever is such a thing anymore. Mm-hmm. Unless you're like Taylor Swift, is there a radio single? I don't know. But,
yeah.
Right, but that feels like one. And also, that is my own personal little, I guess I maybe lied in my other answer. That is my little political statement, but you could also say it was just a song about a mockingbird. And I'm not going to go into it, really, but that was my, in my head, that was a statement.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
That's good.
So that could be a bit.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll stay tuned, as they say, for that. So let's talk a little bit about how you first became interested or this interested in birds. I mean, the world of bird watchers seems, to me at least, a bit esoteric, and it's sort of populated with folks who tend to be, near as I can tell, enormously focused, if not obsessive. So first, how does that description square with your own assessment of bird watchers and your own assessment of yourself in that way?
Yeah, well, I didn't, like I said, get into bird watching until later in my life. I mean, it was 2004, and I had moved to New Jersey after Bob and I got married. And so I was living in New York City and totally just not paying attention to nature, I guess, really.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was like online searching for something, the Christmas bird count popped up. So I said, oh, I'm going to go out and check out birds in my neighborhood. For some reason, I don't know why I got compelled to do that, but I took a cheap pair of binoculars. I went outside and I tried to ID a bird, and I could not even ID a house sparrow. And it really made me angry. So the next day I bought a Peterson guide and I studied up on my house sparrow, and I went outside the next day and I positively ID'd the house sparrow, and that was the thing that hooked me. It totally just hooked me, and I became completely obsessed with wanting to know about birds and learn about them and learn about how to ID them. And it also blew my mind that they were all around me and I didn't even know it before.
Yeah.
You know? And in terms of, you know, yes, I have met many, many wonderful people throughout my years. I have become really good friends with people. It's a great community, the birdwatching community.
Yeah,
a lot of us are obsessive and kind of like, you know, we chase birds. Some do, some don't. Some people list, some people don't. I'm happy with seeing birds in my yard. Some people need to travel, but they're all just passionate, you know, about birds in some way, and it's fabulous.
No, it is cool, and it's really admirable. I mean, just even earlier this summer on a family trip, we were with some people in our group who were, at least two of them were pretty hardcore birders. And it's really, even if you don't share that enthusiasm, at least not yet, although it's kind of taken in by their enthusiasm, but just the way they respond. And not to mention, at least one guy had like some insane binoculars, but that's a whole nother story. But that's like,
yeah.
Oh, I mean, you are really devoted if you got those kind of binoculars. But it's really great because, like you say, whether they're tracking them or listing or just enjoying what they see and say, oh, yeah, I saw that, which I've seen before, but I haven't seen it before here. So it's still kind of a cool and new experience. So, yeah, there's just a whole different kind of excitement and sense of discovery that those people seem to really project that's pretty intoxicating.
Yeah, and I've also, for my entire birdwatching life, I've always used eBird, which is a citizen science database.
Mm.
I've, from 2004, used that, so I keep all my lists in there. But it's great because it gathers data from all over the world now. And it is really like a citizen science kind of device where they can compile data, they learn trends about, you know, bird populations, you know, what's declining, what might be increasing. So it's a wonderful, wonderful project.
That's great.
That encourage everyone to use
bird
watching.
So Stephanie, how does the intense focus or obsessiveness of a bird watcher correspond in your mind to the relentless drive often necessary to create music, to write songs and bring them to life through often long hours in the studio?
Mm-hmm. They definitely correspond. I guess a couple of people have asked me this so far, and it's interesting. I didn't really know that that people would think about it that way. But, I mean, I'm pretty much of an OCD person anyway, so
mm-hmm.
It's easy for me to get, you know, lost in just sitting there watching birds. And it's also easy for me to sit and either whether I'm at a concert or if I'm in making music myself or if I'm just, you know, with a bunch of friends jamming or something, that is like it's like a singular focus. So
yeah.
Birds, singular focus, music, singular focus. And I think they're really interrelated. So doing an album about birds was like hyper-focused.
Yeah. And on a related note to at least the OCD part, did you create your website?
Bob pretty much did, but I created all the content.
Okay. Because I think we should mention that the website is therearebirds.com, and it's, I think, a fantastic website. Covers all kinds of ground. There's photos. There's information. There's usually, I think, at least one song streaming that people can check out, in addition to the samples we're playing here. And that's also, at the moment at least, if someone were inclined to buy a copy of There Are Birds, that's got the exclusive. That's the place you can get it. Yeah. Yeah, so.
That's right. Thank you. Yes, therearebirds.com.
So let's hear one more, at least, snippet of a song, actually one that you mentioned. This is a piece of Migration is Over. And again, that's new music from Stephanie Seymour from the album There Are Birds on Talking Animals on WMNF.
We're going to find that one good bird in the park. If it kills us or not, we're going to find that one good bird in the park. If it kills us or not. On a day when it seems that your prospects are narrow, make sure that you add your daylist house sparrow. You're listening hard for bobbling pinkers, but all that you hear are skulking tea drinkers. We'll find that one good bird in the pond.
That's Migration is Over from the album There Are Birds by Stephanie Seymour, our guest today on Talking Animals on WNF. So that's sort of a delightful time warp, in a sense, to that tune. How did you hit upon the idea of that musical setting for that song, which actually closes out the album?
I know this sounds weird, but like with the second part of that song has like crazy mad horns, and it's just like, so I figured I wanted to do like an Andrew Sisters kind of meets the theme from Family Guy song.
Okay.
It is in my head.
Wow.
So yeah, it's just a very much like jazz hands kind of thing at the end.
Yeah.
Kicking your heels up kind of thing.
Well, yeah, you know, I got the Andrews Sisters part loud and clear. I think I might have missed the other part.
Yeah, you'll have to continue on if you want to hear the Family Guy.
Yeah, cool. So, as I mentioned kind of near the beginning of the show, among the qualities of this album that I find striking is that you write some of the songs from the birds' point of view. Talk to me about writing songs that way, and maybe as part of the answer, maybe you could touch on or include discussing your song, Bald Eagle.
Oh, you picked the song, ding, 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 you picked the song with the weirdest story.
Okay, great. So congratulations to me.
You win. Yeah, this is, it's really humorous, actually, but kind of weird. I was, I had to have a minor procedure, and I was under that propofol, or whatever, it's like Twilight, right? You're kind of under. So as I was, apparently, I was coming out of the anesthesia haze, and I had these images. I felt like a wind in my face, and I heard in my ears like a whooshing sound. And I remember clearly looking to my left and then looking right, and I saw eagles flying with me. And I was like, oh, my God, I must be an eagle. And then I just feel like, you know, someone shaking me, and I wake up, and I, like, look at the nurse, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm an eagle. And she's just like, all right, honey, have some juice. You know, it was like she did not understand my out-of-body experience that I just had as being an eagle. So
yeah.
I did write that song from the eagle's perspective, because in my anesthesia haze, I was actually an eagle.
And also never quite imagining that this was the genesis of that song, but at least as far as the song, and it is, I know, I should have been paying closer attention, I guess. But the eagle, it is from the eagle's point of view, but what's also kind of cool and neat is that before the song is over, there's clearly an eagle basically sort of commenting on another eagle.
Yeah, when he's saying, I look to my, what's my lyric? Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't have him in front of me right now, but
I'm
basically
trying to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yes. He's like, yep, exactly. He's looking to his left and he's looking to the right, and he can see black and white. Or
yeah, and I'm an eagle too, I
and
think,
I'm
or
an
something.
Eagle too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very cool. And okay, so I guess I should ask now, in light of that story, are there other songs on the album that are from the point of view of the bird that weren't propofol inspired?
Propofol inspired. Yeah. I guess Northern Mockingbird, you know, which is, like I said, is a little bit of my political statement, but it is saying, you know, I'm not crazy. So that is from the bird's point of view. Though I don't really believe there's any others that take that exact point of view. There's a few songs that are specifically about a certain bird, like House Sparrow, you know, about Emily, the bird we rescued.
Right. Well, I was going to ask about that because that's kind of a cool story and among many songs that just jump off the record. So, tell us a little bit of how that encounter happened and the song that resulted.
Well, Bob found her. It was a really super hot summer day, and he was mowing the lawn, and he almost ran right over her, but he found her, and he picked her up, and we took her inside of our house and just put her in a little box and gave her food and water, and I just sat there with her for like a few hours, and I was singing to her, and I named her Emily. And
and why Emily?
I don't know.
It
came to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, since that's pivotal to the song, I thought I should at least ask. But
it's not a specific meaning for me. But and she actually recovered. We were very shocked but pleased that she recovered, and we it was really super cute. Like, she wouldn't leave. She wouldn't leave the house, and we finally had to take a big broomstick and kind of extend her out the window. And really, right before, she wouldn't go off, and she looked back at us like a very specific look that said, thank you, and then she flew off to meet her friends that were on a tree that we saw that she joined some other house sparrows. It was really like, you know, It meant so much to us, because I know it sounds crazy, but we knew she was saying thank you.
Yeah.
We knew that little bird was saying thanks.
Yeah, no, just looking back that way and kind of hesitating and stuff, so that's pretty neat. And it's also a very cool, catchy song as an added bonus. So.
Yes, thank you. And you don't really know that she's only, in quotation marks, a house sparrow until the very end, too. Because, you know, and typically they're kind of considered pests.
Right.
To be nice about it in America, right, because they're not native, and I understand that, but, you know, I wasn't going to let her die, so.
Right.
And I think, my feeling is that, you know, everything has a right to be here as much as I do, or anybody else, like, everything has a right to be here.
Right, and somewhere Emily is zooming around thinking how grateful she is to you and Bob for looking after her that day.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Yep.
So how do you approach writing these songs? Do words come first in some and music second and the other way around? Or is there a particular way that you approach these 12 songs?
I think, in the past, like, mostly I would write lyrics first and then I would, like, try to get a melody coming to me. Or it would be rare that a melody comes.
Yeah.
But with these songs, I definitely had some lyrics first. But once I got lyrics and just, like, a hook, like I said, I don't know how it happened, but I would then just get this whole, not just a melody, but just I would hear the whole song fully coming to me in my head, and I would write the lyrics accordingly, although I would, obviously I was tailored them to what I was trying to say, and, you know, when you're writing, you want certain things to rhyme, or maybe you want this kind of meter or whatever, but,
sure.
I was a lot of the time I was getting full-on melodies and full-on kind of parts of songs coming to me before I even had lyrics.
Wow. That's great. Again, a powerful inspiration and not to be ignored or trifled with. It's like, hey, let me get these songs down.
That's right. That's how I felt. Like, let's get them while they're coming to me.
Yeah. Cool. Well, speaking of that, maybe we should hear one more, at least portion of a song. So this is part of a piece called Northern Lapwing. And again, it's from the great new record, There Are Birds by Stephanie Seymour.
Have you heard the birds are back again? But I don't know when they'll fly.
That's Northern Lapwing from the album There Are Birds. Stephanie, sort of nearing the end of our time, but another thing about the album that was pretty hard not to notice is that a bunch of first-rate musicians play on it, including Charlie Giordano, keyboardist with a little combo called the E Street Band, and others who've played with Jay Giles and T-Bone Burnett and Patti Smith and Ian Hunter and many, many others. So that's not bad. But how did they enter the picture?
Well, I know Charlie because he is in Cheryl Marshall's band, who I sing with Cheryl, and he's also in Deborah Berg's band, who I sing with. So
okay.
That's how I met Charlie.
Nice.
I've known Sim Kane, who played the drums for, like, since I was, like, in the Aquanetas.
Yeah, I should just quickly, sorry to interrupt, but I should say that given what we've already established early on, that you were a drummer first and foremost, that it's probably not surprising that there is great drumming on this album.
Like, I knew I wanted Sim. It was just like one of those things where I had to have Sim.
Yeah, so. No, that guy is fantastic. Wow.
Yeah, amazing. And, you know, James Mastro, who, you know, plays in Ian Hunter's band now, who, again, he was in Health and Happiness Show, the bongos. James, I knew from the Aquanetas days, too. And Ray Nissen, who's an amazing bass player, but Ray not only did the bass, but he arranged all the brass and strings and the horn, and did the horn arrangements too.
Wow.
So he, you know, and of course my husband Bob Perry, who, you know, did everything from guitar, producing, engineering, mixing. If it wasn't for Bob, who used to be, by the way, in Winter Hours, he was one of the guitar players in Winter Hours, a really wonderful band that is from New Jersey, but they were on a national, you know, national and international level.
Yeah.
So we've, and the background singers, Cheryl Marshall, Deborah Berg, Marianne Nissen, Marianne Emerson, she goes by. Sorry,
okay.
Man. And the horn players, Garrett Fashone, if I'm saying that wrong, Garrett, you can kill me. Ken Zampella and Eric Storm.
Well, we can always fix that in post, as they used to say. But but that's the thing. I mean, it's such good playing, so crisply. But again, there's like a real sense of joy that I think just sort of emanates from the record.
Yeah, it is a happy record. I mean, there's definitely there's happiness, but you know, there's also some somber songs. Like I said, you know, like Violet Crown Hummingbird, again, that's pretty much another song about, you know, it's a little sad, but they're all like kind of couched in strong melodies with, you know, lots of harmonies, like pop kind of songs.
Yeah. And so, Stephanie, what's been the reaction of musicians that you've known for decades? Since, again, we've established you started playing professionally many, many moons ago. Are there people, I'm sure, saying this is great? Or are others saying, I think Steph's gone around the bend, it's all bird songs?
No,
or,
I mean, I'm thankful. I've been getting really, really good response to this, and it means so much to me. It really does. You know, I have a really wonderful champion and my friend and bandmate, Ed Rogers. Ed plays, you know, does his own music, and we're in his band sometimes, and he's just been wonderfully outspoken about it, and I can't thank him enough. I've just been getting such positive feedback, and I just want this album to be heard. You know, that's my goal. I want it to reach the birdwatching community, you know, but I want it to reach beyond. I feel like it can bring people in and bring people together and have a really positive message, you know.
For sure. Well, that brings me to a couple quick things before we unfortunately have to wrap up here. But again, just want to let people know that the website is therearebirds.com. And so really, I think, good, beautiful, comprehensive website. So all kinds of info, images, bird watching, playing, and again, at least one song streaming at any given moment, and other info about Stephanie and the project and whatever. So that's therearebirds.com. And again, at the moment at least, maybe other people want to get in on this, but at the moment at least, that's the only place where you can actually buy There Are Birds. So another potential reason to go there. And so I guess in our last moment or two, one of the things I wanted to ask is, given everything we talked about, the musicians and the playing and stuff, are there any plans to either tour behind There Are Birds or at least do a few select shows? Or
there might be. I'm slowly being persuaded to possibly do a few select shows.
Okay.
So we'll see. There might be a record release party in the works. So,
cool.
What's
your hesitance?
My hesitance? You know, I don't know. I get so nervous before playing.
Oh, okay.
It's that, it's nerves, it's
like
a whole bunch of things.
Like stage fright kind of nerves? Or
kind of stage fright, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But I'll think about it for like 7 weeks before this. Like if my whole like 2 months will be all that's all I can think about.
Uh-oh. So all right, yeah.
But that's all right, you know, I'm going to get over that. I think we'll do a show. So.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah. I mean, people, whoever, I imagine that's probably going to be in the Jersey, New York City area. So people that live near there are certainly lucky and keep an eye out for that. And again, I guess when that is plans are set for that, then people could go to thereareBirds.com to learn about shows and stuff. So
exactly.
Cool. So Stephanie, well, I think we're just about to reach the end of our time. But again, we've been speaking with Stephanie Seymour one last time. The album's called There Are Birds. And quickly, I wanted to say one of the emails that came in said simply, just delightful. Can't wait to listen to the album. So that was nice. And
let's give a shout out also to Kim Rogers for bringing us together, Duncan, right?
Absolutely.
Kim Rogers.
Yeah.
Wonderful musician.
Nope, she is. And she's so supportive of other people's work. And she's a longtime fan and benefactor of the Rave Ups. But her own work is fantastic. And yeah, she introduced me to you and your work. And so, yeah, thumbs up to Kim.
Full circle.
For
sure. Thanks, Kim.
Cool. All right. So, Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. Good luck with the record. And we'll keep an eye out for shows, and maybe we'll even somehow lure you to Florida or somewhere else outside of your own little immediate area. But either way, good luck with the record. It's really terrific.
Duncan, thank you so much for having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, the pleasure was mine. Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
In a few moments, I'll talk with Gracie Grishup of Pet Pal Animal Shelter. They're Diamonds in the Rough. Event is set for September 7th, and Gracie will fill us in on the details. Right now, though, it's time to step into the comedy corner. We're going to duck in there briefly for a very short piece by Tom Papa, who's raising questions that many of us have. You'll see what I mean. This is Fake Service Dog by Tom Papa in today's comedy corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
No one can deal. How about these people with the fake service dogs? You see these creeps? Fake service dogs. There's real service dogs that help real people. Then a girl shows up with a Pekingese sticking out of a Hello Kitty handbag and tries to tell us it's working, and then scams a certificate to show at the gate. I have to have my puppy with me at all times or I'm going to lose my marbles. Oh, by all means, welcome aboard. What could possibly go wrong with your crazy ass at 40,000 feet?
That was Tom Papa with a short piece called Fake Service Dog, taken from one of his appearances on Conan. Now let's speak to Gracie Grishup about the Pet Pal Animal Shelter event, Diamonds in the Rough, coming up not long after the holiday weekend. This is Gracie Grishup on Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Gracie.
Good morning, Duncan. Good morning, everybody.
Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals. So let's start with a quick overview, if you would, of Pet Pal Animal Shelter.
Oh, yes, Pet Pal Animal Shelter is awesome. I've worked with Pet Pal for 7 years. Absolutely the best shelter ever. We have about 20 adoptable dogs right now and probably around 10 or 15 adoptable cats. We also have a pig that's hanging out with us, and we get little critters and such as well. We have a full sick site as well, so we're treating animals, and we do most of our pulls from other shelters and do a lot of rehab and heartworm treatment and mange and all that stuff. We treat everything.
Wow.
Then we put them up for adoption. So all that's costly, and these types of fundraisers definitely help with that.
Which brings us, I think not coincidentally, to Diamonds in the Rough.
I like how you're saying that. You like that, don't you?
I know. It's kind of like, oh my God, if this guy says it again, I'm going to turn off the radio, though, so I got to be careful, probably.
I've got a little funk going on. So
that's
I sound
right.
Like Phoebe from Friends with Smelly Cat. You know?
There you go. So tell us about what Diamonds in the Rough involves. Without mentioning any prices, if possible, just give us kind of the lowdown of what's happening that night.
Yeah, okay. So Diamonds in the Rough, R-U-F-F. You can go to our website, by the way, petpalanimalshelter.com, and it'll pull up all of our events and links and such. It's going to be held this year. This is our second one. We did it last year, and it was so much fun. An amazing vision and an amazing group of volunteers and staff that all come together and help and make it happen. But we asked for donations of jewelry, and it's just coming out of the woodworks. Friends, neighbors, coworkers, everyone's just digging through their old jewelry boxes and getting jewelry out, and we take it all, clean it up. And then we put it, you know, out there for sale, and all of those proceeds benefit the shelter. So it's kind of a unique little fun gem of an event, and it's probably one of my favorite ones. So this is our second one, It'll be on September 7th at Hawthorne Bottle Shop, which is located in St. Petersburg on Central Avenue, from 6 to 9. It is dog-friendly on the outside patio. They serve food, of course, so, you know, there is that limitation. But the patio is huge, patio, and they serve drinks and wine and all that good stuff. And we'll have rock shops, fine gems, and jewelry will be there, and craft canine treats as well. So we have a couple of different sponsors coming on board. Plus, Rory is kind of our mascot for this whole fundraiser. Rory is the dog that's on the Diamonds in the Rough flyer, and she's a Pet Pal alumni. She was adopted in 2016 by the owner, Tegan, of Hawthorne Bottle Shop. So there's just a little thing. She'll be there doing autographs and, you know, Rory selfies and strutting around. Blinging it out. So it's just a fun night, and we hope to raise a lot of money.
And let me ask you this, Gracie. So the jewelry that people are donating that then will be available that night, is that strictly jewelry for humans, or can some of the jewelry be for the dogs?
You know, anything goes. We've had a lot of people, actually. Last year when we did it, some people showed up with their animals, and they were trying on stuff and walking out all blinged out. So I think anything goes as long as you're monitoring them, of course.
Yeah.
It's not really like pet jewelry, but, you know, I think that anything goes, especially with Halloween coming up around the corner.
Sure.
You might as well go ahead and glam it up.
I like it.
And it's good for everybody, anything.
Cool. So you mentioned that there's information on the Pet Pal website, but also I believe there's a Facebook event page specifically for...
Of course.
Yeah,
we're on Instagram, Pet Pal Animal Shelter, Facebook. There's an event page. We've been posting local, you know, a lot of updates about it.
Cool.
And you can find all your information there as well.
Great. Cool. Well, this sounds like it's going to be another great night and a lot of fun and a great way to help keep all the great work that Pet Pal Animal Shelter does funded and moving along nicely and finding homes for all those nice dogs and cats and including mascots.
Yes, thank you. And we appreciate you having us on again.
Of course.
You highlighted this last year for us, which was our first one last year. So definitely appreciate the love, Duncan.
Yeah, no, it's a really neat idea, and it just seems like there's so many different elements to it. So whatever people are interested in, there's any number of reasons that they could turn up and have fun and help support Pet Pal Animal Shelter. So Gracie, good luck on Saturday. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
On Saturday the 7th, I should say, not just Saturday.
That is correct.
So, okay, cool. All right, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Coming up at 11 on WNF, it's Rob Lori with Radioactivity, extending this three-hour block of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, including in the noon hour, Midpoint with Nola Lalay. Then at 1 p.m., the music kicks back in with the wonderful show Euro Radio, hosted by Paco Morales, flowing into Scott Elliott and his wonderful All Souls edition of It's the Music at 2 p.m. And then the music continues on into the afternoon and night and beyond right here on WNF and WNF.org. I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize, something to select from the Talking Animals vault. To the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song, appropriately chosen, I think, given our conversation with Stephanie, it's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
I can't look at the rocket launch, the trophy wives of the astronauts, and I won't listen to their words, 'cause I like birds.
All right, we'll take your guess on that off the air, because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Next week, my guest will be Dr. Valeria Vergara, who has spent the better part of 20 years studying beluga whales, which are distinctive animals for reasons that extend far beyond their stark white color. Dr. Vergara's research has looked at how such an audio-oriented species deals with the challenges of an increasingly noisy environment and done some really interesting work. Plus, again, they're interesting animals from the get-go. So I invite you to join me for that next Wednesday. I can also invite you to join or look at talkinganimals.net for links to all our social media, follow us on Twitter, etc. Meanwhile, we're going to close out today's show with a song from Stephanie Seymour's album, There Are Birds. This is one of many great ones, but it's a shorter one, so that's why we're going to try to get most of it before the NPR News headlines. So this is Talking Animals on WMF Tampa, and stay tuned for Rob Lori after NPR News headlines. This is House Sparrow New music from Stephanie Seymour on Talking Animals on WMNF.